listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
I hope you're hungry. Whoa. Get ready for a potluck. Isn't that a great intro?
It is. We briefly talked about potentially having some sort of a new theme or intro for these episodes. So I'm really glad that you chose to do that, especially without telling me. Makes it even better.
So today we have a potluck episode, which is you submit the questions. We answer them for you. If you ever have a question you'd like us to answer on a potluck, go to syntax.fm, click the Ask a Potluck Question button, and put your text in the box, submit it, and we'll answer them, maybe.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions, so we really try.
Yeah, but a lot of them are not very good, so keep submitting your good ones.
But if we don't answer yours, this doesn't mean yours wasn't good. It just
Yeah, that's true. If we don't answer it, it might be because we've answered it in a previous potluck or because we just don't want to. Just joking. Keep submitting them. We love them. Today, we are sponsored by two awesome companies. First one is .tech Domains, and the second one is Netlify. Funny enough, both of these sponsors I used in my latest project, Uses.tech, and we will talk about both of these companies partway through the episode. So, Mr. Tolinsky.
If you haven't listened to that Uses.tech episode, go put that one on. That was a really good episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How you doing today, Mr. Tolinsky?
Sorry, you can tell by my timing, things are, you know, they're just how they are when you're, you know, parent. I was joking on Twitter and with Courtney that when we go to the coffee shop, I'm going to ask for a pitcher for the table. Just give me a pitcher. Let's get a couple fish bowls of cold brew. And she was like, can you just get them to bring us the keg? And so, you know, this is just how it is. We're living, all that stuff.
Fish bowl. Yeah. When I was in high school, the like cool place for suburban kids to hang out was this restaurant. It's a Canadian restaurant called Boston Pizza. You don't have that down there, do you?
I don't know. We have Boston Market.
No, totally different. So Boston Pizza is a Canadian pizza chain, and it's like the place to go drink when you're in high school. And they had these like fish bowls where you just get like a big thing of Kool-Aid and vodka and you just drink it out of a fish bowl. That reminded me of that.
Oh, yeah. That was, I mean, okay. Yeah, fish bowls were always definitely a thing. Boston Pizza, though. Is Boston known for their pizza? Boston people get at us. I don't know. Is Boston known? I mean, I know Detroit, Chicago,
it's Chicago
and New
that's
York,
known.
And there's California, apparently. I don't think California really is, but sorry, I'm going to anger people from any of these cities. Get at me because Detroit pizza is the best and you all know it.
Boston pizza is not the best pizza. I'm at the restaurant and I can't speak to the actual city's pizza, but... Anyways, let's get into our first question. First question we have here is from Wandering Wolf. Ooh. This is actually a bit of a big question, so buckle up. Hey, Scott and Wes, I'm a huge fan of the show. Thank you so much. In March 2019, I left a creative agency that I've been with for 2 years to pursue freelance. Around October of last year, I started to get the feeling that freelance wasn't for me. So maybe 6-8 months on freelance and said, it's not really for me. I got pretty lonely. I really started missing collaborating with my colleagues face to face. Fast forward to early January, I was offered a lead dev job at a mid-sized company and I took it. It is exactly the work I've always been wanting to do, building apps in React that will end up needing to scale. The pay is really solid and the benefits are great and I'm going to learn a ton.
Ooh.
So far, so good. I've only been at the job for a week and I really hate it. I consider myself to be pretty intuitive and I feel like I just don't fit in and I see many red flags. Everyone is perfectly nice and their backend developers are very talented, but there is no process in place regarding properly building applications or collaborating between designers and developers. There also isn't any real excitement around on what we are building and the thinking is somewhat antiquated. I'm fun, positive, energetic person. So far, everyone has been pretty blah.
Mm-hmm.
I've been miserable this whole week and super disheartened. What should I do? Do I suck it up for a while and start looking for something else, potentially taking a pay cut? That's the scariest thing of all is a well-paying job you hate.
Yep.
And moving back into doing web dev as opposed to building apps and to work for another creative agency with people that are more my jam. Feeling a little frustrated, little lost. I could use some words of wisdom from El Toro Loco Talinsky and Barracuda Boss. Thank you for so much for being mentors. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a tough one, right? So first of all, congrats.
I have personal experience to draw from this.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, a week, I don't think is enough time, right? Like I think that you probably can get vibes from people. And I've certainly done freelance jobs where I go into a company and you get those vibes immediately from the people that you're working with. So I would push it out a little bit longer. Well, you said that you are a lead dev at a mid-sized company. So the fact that you are a lead dev of, it sounds like you're like the lead of doing apps, like maybe there is some space to change things, right? Like not necessarily this can't always happen, but in a lot of cases, you can be the change that company needs to see. And it certainly you'll be hit with some opposition because you're the new guy that's been there for a week. And these other people have maybe a little bit jaded or maybe a little bit just used to doing what they've been doing for so long. But if you're the lead of it, maybe change things up, maybe put some new processes in place, new tooling, things like that. So I would definitely see that out because it's work that you like. It's good pay. It just seems that the culture is a little bit different. And I think that could potentially be changed. And then, I don't know, maybe in 6 months, if it's not panning out, I certainly wouldn't think that it'd be a bad idea to keep looking and keep your ear out for something. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're dead on in a lot of that because the more I've been thinking about this, I have more and more personal experience to draw from. You mentioned as being like a lead and being able to make that change. I'll never forget. One of my first jobs was I worked as a projectionist. Essentially, I was an audio technician or video technician or whatever, but I was a projectionist for the medical school at the University of Michigan. And there was a really interesting culture there where everyone had been there for a very, very, very long time, like 30 years, right? And they were just the way that they did things. And I came in on my very first week and I walked into this one closet and the closet was an absolute mess. It looked like there was stuff on the floor. I mean, there was just no organization. It was just the absolute biggest nightmare you've ever seen in your entire life. And so I had nothing to do my first week and I cleaned the closet. Not only did I like actually scrub clean it, like a, you know, like making it nice and clean, but I organized the life out of it in the best possible way. So you could actually walk in and find things. And I did so to respect even the non-system that was in place. And what happened? I got absolutely destroyed by an older gentleman who had worked there for his whole life. And it's like, what are you doing touching my closet? I'm like, I just saved your darn closet. And like, my boss came in and was like, listen, you did the right thing. Like, do not like you're going to get some resistance when you're trying to improve things. So if you have the power to work on and improve things, you might want to go for it. You might alienate yourself, right? You got to be a little bit careful about that. But again, like Wes said, if you have that title, you might have the ability to change things. When I got my first senior role, I really changed a lot of the process in terms of adding better Git workflows and things like that, that weren't, you know, there were things we really wanted to do, but given the opportunity, now I could do it. Another little piece I have to draw on is a mentor of mine. He got a job of his dreams in Chicago, which is like 4 hours from where we lived, right? So it's a decent
great
move.
Great pizza.
Right, great pizza. No, I don't. I'm not a big fan of Chicago pizza. Sorry. but he picked up and they were planning on moving their whole family there. They had, he was commuting on the weeks and then just staying in a place temporarily while they looked for a house. And he had worked at this job and basically was ready to pick up everything and move for this better paying, what he thought was like a more advanced job. And what he found was that the managers didn't understand dev as much as he thought they did. Although the work that they were putting out looked nice and was creative, they didn't understand dev process. They didn't understand how to work with the developer. They were giving him a bunch of awful tasks. I mean, he's a smart, excellent developer and he just could not do it. He ended up quitting, just saying, no, screw it, come back. And then luckily he did that before they, you know, moved their whole family out there. But the whole thing is that if it's not right, it's not right. And you don't have to stick it out. If you can come back to whatever you're doing before, or if you can look for another job, I don't know if I would jump off of the ship before I had another ship pulled up that you could hop onto, right? So if it's really not feeling right, even right now, if it's not feeling right, apply. Just start applying for stuff. Just apply. And if they ask you in an interview why you'd apply for things, just say, this place really isn't right for me. I don't want to like rag on the people who work there. It's just not necessarily a good fit with the way that I like to work. And people are reasonable. They'll understand. So maybe just start applying and who knows, maybe another job will come up and who knows, you might have to take a tiny little pay bump, but also maybe you might find a really great job. So just start looking if it's not the right field, just start looking and you don't have to accept another job if an offer comes along and your current one gets better. There's no harm in looking there. So that's my thoughts really.
Awesome. You want to grab the next question?
Yeah, this next question is from Nicholas Graham, and he asks, does Syntax have a Discord or Slack community to collaborate on topics? Well, Graham, I'm glad you asked. The reason why I laugh at and I even use this question at all is just because the episode that came out on Monday was this. So Graham had asked this question before we had done that episode. So we just wanted to give a quick shout out. There's a Slack community for people who have purchased Wes's courses. There's a Discord community for Level Up Tutorials. And Wes and I just created a Reddit community for listeners of Syntax. So you go ahead and sign up for that Reddit and you can chat about the episodes or you can join my Discord and chat about the episodes in the Syntax chat room there. But those are the options right now.
Yeah, it's reddit.com/r/syntaxfm
or syntaxfm.reddit.com. I didn't know if you knew that.
Really? No.
Yeah. syntaxfm.reddit.com.
It makes sense why they call it a subreddit.
Yep. Yes.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome. So please go ahead and post anything you want there. Well, maybe not anything, but
yeah, don't post anything. That's not a good
thing. I think it'd be really cool to see what it looks like. I know there's a lot of people that aren't on Twitter. We certainly will still use our Twitter, but I just spent all this time uploading a banner and check it out.
Spent all this time uploading a banner. That's great.
All right, next question from Rockin' Rolinski.
I want to know if this person knows that my dad's name is actually Rock, and like a lot of his nicknames would be like involving rock and roll. Like his friends would be like, "Hey, Rock and Roll." Like, I mean, his name's Rock, so this is funny. Rockin' Rolinski. Hey, what's up?
So Scott's dad asks, "What is one thing that really annoys you about JavaScript? It can be things like missing proper module imports." What does that mean? Missing proper module imports. Why is it missing that?
If you are Rockin' Rolinski, since you didn't use your real name, I know it's not my dad who asked this question. Hit us up on Twitter about what you're referring to here, because we're interested.
Yeah. Anyways, what really annoys you about JavaScript? I thought about this, like not a lot.
Yeah,
like
me too.
I'm not one of those people that's always just constantly complaining about JavaScript. But there's one thing that does annoy me every time I import a module. It's the fact that if you're typing it, you import what it's called first and then where it's from second. So import render from React DOM. And I wish it was the other way around because of better auto completion. So if it was from React DOM import, and then it would auto complete all of the exports in that thing. And there are like things out there, but the sheer fact of the way that you write it first doesn't lend itself to good auto-completion. Whereas if you gave it the file name first and then what you want to import from there, that would be much better, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, so this was when I had my initial reaction to this question was the thing I like least about JavaScript is when you tell like Java developers or C developers that you write JavaScript, they're like, okay, because they think what you're doing is, you know, writing, you know, in importing 1,000 jQuery plugins to whatever you're doing to do a lightbox or something. Like, that's not really what we're doing anymore in JavaScript. There's so much more there, but that's not a problem with the language itself, obviously. My answer to this for what's the thing that you would like that you could change about the language itself? And this might, I don't know if this is controversial at all, but this is something that I really like. I personally wish there was an official like required formatting. What do they call that?
Style?
There's like a word enforced for that.
Sanity?
Enforced. Right. Well, you know, you could think of something like Python, right? Where if you miss the actual way that Python is typed, it breaks. And I really like that. I mean, sure, Prettier has come in and been like, okay, this is how it formats it, but there's still just, you know, when you open a JavaScript file that somebody else wrote, you sort of don't know what you're getting in terms of formatting, regardless of whatever. And they have to opt into prettier. I would really love it personally if there was just a, this is the specific way you had to write it. I understand why it's not, but just a nice little thing that I would prefer personally.
Yeah. Yeah. They just force you to write it in a specific manner. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah. Next question is from Ivan, the great or the terrible or any, I don't know. There's lots of Ivans. Shout out to B-boy Ivan. If you don't see him, he's a 90s B-boy. Okay. So this question is from, have you tried Fauna, DB, fauna.com? The guys from Webflow are suggesting it. So I have a neat little note here. That's their tagline. It says, a database built for serverless featuring native GraphQL, a full-featured database to your apps in minutes. Access effortlessly from the browser, from mobile. Never worry about data correctness, capacity, redundancy, latency, and availability. So FaunaDB apparently is going to do everything in the world for you. And it's sort of built around this whole serverless thing. So to answer Ivan's question, I have not tried Fauna. I have looked at Fauna. I have opened their documentation page about a couple times in the past, but I haven't actually gotten any feet on the floor with this one just yet. It's an interesting looking thing, but I don't really know a ton about it.
It seems pretty cool. They actually tried to sponsor the podcast, but we're out of spots. So here's your free plug, Fauna, fauna.com.
Yeah.
/syntax. Everybody go to fauna.com/syntax. And then their 404s are going to spike and be like, what happened?
Oh, no.
Anyways, it looks like it's like a database, but also has an API in GraphQL as well as another REST API. I don't know. It seems cool. Certainly a lot of people have been asking me about it over the last like year or year and a half. I don't know anybody that's running apps on it, but it certainly seems pretty nifty.
Yeah. And so it's a hosted database, right? You're not hosting it yourself. I don't know. Can you host it yourself? It seems like there's this world right now where the lines are sort of becoming blurred between the database itself and the management of the database. You could things like Hasura or any of these new sort of backend CMSs that are coming out, where instead of even thinking about database schemas, you're just thinking about data and how it's stored. And me personally, I really like that. I like that I'm not having to think about the technicals and somebody's going to worry about how the details of the performance for the database work and things like that. So I don't know. I'm going to give Fauna a try. It's a matter of when I'm going to find that time, but I'm definitely going to give it a try. I just think there is probably a lot of competition in the space around hosted data, whether that is a database, a data as a service, these services like Fauna. There's a lot of stuff popping up with GraphQL. What's that? Neo4j? Yeah. Neo? What is that? Is that what it actually is? Neo4j?
Neo4j is a graph platform, but it's not GraphQL. They're the ones that have totally gone in a separate direction.
Right.
And done their own thing that's not GraphQL, which is cool because it's always good to see like people questioning best practices. That's how we got React. Cool.
And
like
GraphQL.
My only like reservation is that like if you ever wanted to take this thing yourself, certainly you could get your data out, but we all remember when Parse shut down, right? But then again, like I'll use Firebase in a hat tip. I'll use Firebase really quickly. So I'm not against these sort of hosted cloud databases for you. You just have to think about are they going to be around forever and can I get my data out?
Right.
So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, those are all big concerns. Who's using it for what and how easy is it for them to get their data out at the end of the day? You know, like if it's being used by Google and Google would need to get their data out, then they're going to make it so you need to, you know, like what are those parameters around that? Definitely things to think about.
Next one is from Eric B. What are your thoughts on including tutorial projects in a portfolio? For example, putting the Sick Fits website from Wes's Advanced React course in the portfolio. I'm relatively new to React and have a couple of my own projects, but a bunch of projects from following the course. Yeah, this is a good question. So first of all, is it allowed? Absolutely. You do whatever you want with the projects you do in my courses. Should you pass it off as your own is another question. So I think what I see most is that people build their own thing. It's not necessarily the exact app that we build, but they say like, all right, I'm going to take the ideas of auth and users and items and relational data and maps, and I'm going to make my own thing that is sort of like that, and absolutely go for that. If you're just putting the finished product of following the tutorial in your portfolio, then I think you should probably mark that as like, not for my own, like, I don't care what you do, but just from somebody looking at your portfolio, they should know that you didn't whip up this thing from scratch, but you did sort of follow a tutorial along the way. I think that's where I'm at with it. What about you?
Yeah, that's a tough one because again, a lot of the challenges that we face in programming are those of how do you get around this issue that you've encountered or this problem that you're trying to solve? And really what things in a portfolio to me should be is, did you solve these problems that prove to me that you're capable of solving problems in the future? And if you're following along to some sort of an example, right, that's maybe paint by numbers, are you really solving these problems yourself, even if the tutorial creator like you and I has left in some issues to help you understand how to solve problems? Are you still solving those problems yourself? Did it display that you had some sort of thought process behind it? Because, okay, here's the deal. If you're applying for a job that's mostly CSS and React stuff, maybe whatever, just some basic JavaScript, or maybe you're just doing CSS, right? Let's just say you're just doing CSS. And then you took a tutorial that was maybe WestBoss's React tutorial and you flipped it by making it your own custom interface. That to me solves all those problems, right? It shows that you thought mm-hmm. about these custom interfaces and you thought about how to solve those things and you didn't just paint by the number. So it, to me, it's more about how you flip it for the things that an interviewer would be looking for. I'm not going to say that like tutorial content is toxic to do in your portfolio. Definitely not the case. Definitely usable, but it has to illustrate that you solved those problems and that you understood why they were problems. Let's say you need to get some eyes on your project. Well, you're going to need a domain for that project. You're going to need an entranceway. Sort of the foyer of your project is the domain. I like to think about it that way. And you're going to want a fancy, cool domain. And that's why we have .tech domain sponsoring us today. With a little bit more about .tech.
Yes.
Is the man himself, WestBoss.
The tech guy, you can call me. Actually, I think Leo Laporte has that. So don't call me the tech guy. Anyways, so .tech, .tech is a new TLD, top level domain, that you can register your own. I actually went and got uses.tech, and I got west.tech, which I don't have anything up there just yet. Ooh. But I got west.tech and uses.tech. We did an episode on a week or two ago, which is really cool. And we just sort of detailed everything that we use on there. And the domain name came from .tech. All kinds of brands, CES, Viacom, Intel, have all migrated to .tech. And it's perfect for representing your brand due to its affinity and inherent meaning. So it's pretty cool. I want you to check out uses.tech, which is the website that I built with my .tech domain name. And I want to encourage you to check, is your name.tech available?
Ooh.
If so, you should grab it and use the coupon code SYNTAX2020. You get 90% off 1, 5, and 10-year .tech domain names. A 10-year domain name. Talk about locking it in. Awesome. Ooh, so go in to go.tech/SYNTAX2020 and use the coupon code SYNTAX2020. To grab your .tech domain name. Thanks to .tech for sponsoring.
All right, next question is from Cam, Killa Cam. He asks, a site you're maintaining is hacked. It's been hacked. What's his name? Elliot Alderson? Is that from Mr. Robot? Is that his name? Mr. Robot has come in.
Don't
there.
Do movie references with me, Scott. We've went over this.
That's a TV show. You know, Landon calls TV shows movies. Landon's like, I want to watch the Mickey movie. You're like, that's TV, man. That's not a movie. And this is Wes right here. Basically the same thing. So how do you fix if Mr. Robot has jumped in there and hacked your box here? What do you do? Well, This is a tough one. So I haven't necessarily been hacked in any sort of ways, but I have had a client who been like, my site's been hacked and we FTP'd into their server. And the first thing we noticed was a billion PHP files that we did not put there. And actually it wasn't even something in the project that we had done. It's a client that we had taken over, but there was a billion PHP files in there and who knows what the heck they were doing. To be honest, I have no idea. And I didn't really care to find out. Here's what I did. First thing is change all of the credentials ASAP, change all of them and make them super duper secure. Add 2FA where you can, just go ham on the login security there. Then next thing, you got to kind of do all this at once. You got to get rid of all their stuff. Cause if they have a back door in there,
yeah,
to get your keys and stuff, maybe change a lot of those passwords that aren't stored in any particular file. That's actually tough. Just start deleting that stuff and changing passwords all at once. Go crazy. And then I guess maybe try to figure out what they did. To be honest, I'm not in a security authority. I just know that I do the best I can in terms of 2FA, keeping my keys private. If there's ever anything compromised, change the keys immediately. And I haven't really experienced too much of this.
Yeah. So I'm not going to answer this in terms of like what happens if a user website gets hacked. Because at that point, you need to figure like, were databases dumped? Was content taken? Sensitive information? So like all of that is sort of a different level. I think this question is, or at least I'm going to answer it in, is I've had a client WordPress website that just got script kiddied at one point, meaning that it's a WordPress website and there's a known vulnerability in a plugin or a version of PHP or in WordPress itself, and somebody runs a script and hits all these websites and injects it. So what do you do at that point? So sort of the first thing you need to do is go and reset all of your passwords, both for your hosting logins, which you should be using two-factor authentication, and if you are just using straight up passwords to log into a server, then reset those. Generate new keys if you're doing that, which would be ideal. Keys and password combo is ideal as well, because then it's something you have and something you know. Then what you do? Reset all of the passwords. So almost in every case, I've had a couple WordPresses hacked over the years. It's because the person's username was, their password was just like dogs123, and they've used that same password on every single thing since they were 12 years old. So at that point, you got to figure out how do they get in? You've changed all the passwords there. And then I just assume that every file is tainted, because like there could be malicious code in there that will, then you're serving it up to your users. So in the case of a WordPress theme, you just basically got to rebuild the site from scratch. And you have to code review every single file, or just grab a fresh copy from your Git repo, ideally, because that will be untainted. Then you got to go get a fresh copy of every single plugin that you have, get a fresh copy of WordPress, because like WordPress has 40 million files. How are you going to check all of those? You're not. Just scrap everything on there, start rebuilding the website. What can also happen in the case of a lot of PHP CMSs is that malicious code can get into the database. So you have to sort of go through that as well. There's a lot of plugins out there that will sort of scan for these known things out there, and then either roll back to an old version. If you can, if you're using like a DigitalOcean or something like that, it's probably better just spin up a new thing and
roll back.
Oh yeah, you could roll it back, I guess. But
yeah, that would be my first inclination, is to find where it's clean and then roll it back.
Yeah, that will get you up and running really as quick as possible. But I would be tempted just to get a brand new IP address, a brand new box, and that way you know none of that stuff has been tainted or whatever. Because like, it's frustrating. Like, certainly I've only had it in cases where it was just a simple little WordPress and it was just a Indonesian script kiddie that got the entire thing. But it certainly could be much worse, and you have to just assume that absolutely everything has been tainted and everything is as an open door. So you have to go through and keep going through all those.
Yeah. And one little thing, if you're using any of these CMSs, right, there are some preventative measures you can take, because if you're going to get hit by a script kiddie or any of that, it's largely because there's these exploits that exist. Yeah. over the course of WordPress or Drupal or whatever. And they're just going to try every WordPress or Drupal site they can find and to see if you're out of date on any of these or if your plugins are out of date or whatever that could contain any of these vulnerabilities. So one thing I always did when I had a Drupal site is I hid the fact that it was Drupal as much as possible. I changed the domain or the URL of the login page so that, you know, they're if they try WP forward, like I used to see server logs on a Drupal site come in saying route not found, and they were searching for WP hyphen login because they know that if it's a WordPress site, then they can potentially do something. So if you change those things to prevent the users from even attempting to get in those specific ways, then that could go a long way as well. This next question is for WestBoss to read, not for me to read.
Next question is from Mina Salib. My bookmarks are overwhelming. I just started learning web dev, and though I sort my bookmark into folder, I end up with so much stuff I don't even know how to use them. Certainly, I had this problem when I was still learning. Every single little article or trick that you'd stumble upon, you'd bookmark it because you probably need that at some point in the future. What do you use for managing your bookmarks on browsers? So I use bookmarks here and there when I'm working on something. Like, let's say I'm looking to do a new intro for one of my courses. I'll bookmark like 6 or 7 MP3 files and maybe some art for things that I like. But every now and then, same as my desktop, same as my downloads, I just blow it all away because it does become overwhelming and you're never actually going to go back and look at all of those things.
Yeah.
If I think about how many times I've went into my bookmarks and said, oh, where was that link from 6 months ago? I don't even remember that I have that link. So just delete everything. You'll feel free. It's the same thing with people who leave tabs open. My wife is awful at this. She leaves just like tabs open for like months. Really?
I do too. I'm the worst. Oh man. Yeah, I bet it's something I've gotten better at, but it's not something that I am excellent at.
You can get all that stuff back. Just Google it or go back to the URL. You'll be able to find that information.
But I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it at that moment. I don't know. Whenever I have that moment, I'll read it.
Oh, man. I never have that moment. I
know that's the answer, is that you never have that moment.
Many times throughout the day, I'll just close absolutely everything, delete everything on my desktop, delete everything in my downloads folder, and just live your life. It's a good life, Scott. So that's not...
I know. I'm so bad about it.
Some people have like really good ways of cataloging all the information they find and bookmarks and notes on everything. And I do none of that. None of that.
We can maybe potentially say that like Notion is good for some of those things. For instance, like Courtney and I were looking to redo our bathroom. Our vanity looks like it's from Lord of the Rings or something. We did not pick it out. So it like does not fit our taste. We've never liked it. And on top of that, it needs work. So we're like, well, we'll just get a new vanity. What? They're like $300, right? We're not going restoration hardware on this, which by the way are like $6,000 or something. They're ridiculous.
Yeah. Restoration hardware is the best, but super expensive.
I was looking for a vanity on there and I could not believe the price. I was like, ooh, this one, like, holy cow. I've never shopped here before. And wow. So yeah, we're looking for a vanity, right? And what we did is we made a gallery table in Notion. Well, I should say I made a gallery table in Notion with basically screenshots of all the different vanities we were considering, you know, sort of like your own custom Pinterest board. And that for that particular project just lived in that particular thing. It was very organized and it necessarily wasn't like a bookmark thing, but those were links that we wanted to have for this specific thing. I remember using Delicious a lot back in the day. It was really nice to tag everything, just store it in there and in whatever. I've been using Pocket lately, but by using Pocket, I mean, I have it installed. I use it occasionally. I find myself using Pocket mostly before flights or situations when I'm going to be offline. I'll just go ahead and grab a bunch of articles I would want to read beforehand, so I'd have something on the plane to look at. But for the most part, yeah, bookmarks are kind of a crapshoot and I don't really use them for anything. So that's pretty much it for me. I just don't use them. Next question is from Tyler Jackson. He says, hey, Scott and Wes, Being an avid user of React and other modern JavaScript frameworks, how would you recommend integrating these technologies into more or less static brochure-style websites? Say, for instance, I have a banking website that's mostly static content, but also complicated JS pieces such as calculators, location finders, and signup forms. I currently reach for jQuery and jQuery plugins for these functionalities, but React and Vue sound like they could also help solve these one-off pieces of functionality. Most tutorials, for example, are about creating apps from the ground up. But what if you want to sprinkle these frameworks and only use them for whatever JS is necessary? How might the both of you solve these scenarios? P.S. I'm a huge fan of the show and can relate to Wes's origin story 100%. Scene kid forever. Scene kid. Yeah, a lot of scene kids. Okay, my answer for this one is largely that React and Vue and any of these things can absolutely be used in this manner. One of the first things you do in like a Create React app or any of these situations is you have an HTML file and you have a div with an ID and you do get element by ID and then render your React application to that ID. Guess what? You can do that on any div in your entire website and you can do it more than once. So while the tutorials certainly don't show it that way, I believe Vue's tutorial does a better job of this than React's. And I saw Dan Abramov talking a little bit about how they could be better about showing that, but it can absolutely be used in that manner. Any of these frameworks.
Yeah, like Facebook.com, the new version, which is awful, but like the Facebook.com that everybody knows.
As opposed to the old version, which was not awful.
The new version is like the UI is horrendous, but like the like regular white and blue Facebook.com is and was a server rendered app with React sprinkled in into little pieces onto the website. Yep. So certainly if Facebook can do it, you can as well.
That's absolutely correct. And again, it's, you know, what are you doing for jQuery? Well, you're saying, hey, go find an ID of an element and do this stuff. You're doing the same thing with React. But again, you'll need some sort of, probably need some sort of compilation step to build out that JavaScript. I would imagine you should be able to find some content on this. I have not looked myself. Maybe that's a series that somebody should make, how to add React to an existing project. And maybe it exists. If you know of a good series or a good tutorial blog or anything that shows React being used in this way, let us know. Like I said, I do know that the official Vue tutorial has a section on this. So check that out.
Yeah, if you want like a development environment where you get like hot reloading, but just on like part of it, like maybe it's like a Drupal website, but like the calculator is built in React, mm-hmm. then you'd have to proxy your website and things like browser sync. I think maybe Parcel does it as well, where you can proxy an existing HTML and embed it in there. There's also this new framework called Alpine.js. I listened to Full Stack Radio with Adam Wathen, and he interviewed Caleb Porzio about this new, it seems kind of like it's very lightweight, sort of a, like a lightweight view for when you just need to sprinkle on a little bit of JavaScript. And it certainly seems to be targeted at that like server rendered HTML, but I do need a bit of customization. So maybe take a look at that as well. It seems pretty nifty.
Yeah, Adam's got good advice. He was instrumental in me picking Discord. He said that he never looked back from picking Discord. And I was like, okay, if Adam feels that way, then like it's definitely like a good opinion to have. So yeah.
That's great. Next question we have here is from, how do you think you're going to say this one?
I'm glad you got this one.
Bartholomew?
No, you get to say. I mean, it could be Bartholomew. It, like, did they do this on purpose? This looks like Polish. I don't know if they're Polish. There's that L character with the line through it. That's the character they have in Polish, but I honestly don't know.
I like that L character. Half the time when I see that, I think there's something on my screen.
Which is, you know, I was watching a hockey, and this is funny, I was watching a hockey game on my iPad, and I swear I thought the Penguins scored a goal last night, and it was just a speck on the screen. I was like, oh no.
Just chips.
I had to wipe it off. Yeah. I was super annoyed.
All right, the question from Bartholomew is, hello, JS Dads. I was wondering whether you could share which backpack or bag you use for carrying laptops. I'm looking for something that would be useful to carry my 16-inch MacBook Pro, but also hold other stuff like groceries, clothes, other various things that you might want to put there. Tech backpacks tend to be sometimes too techy or too stiff, too rigid. And when it comes to real life, we sometimes need more flexible things. We're human after all. We need to eat and drink. Maybe you found the ultimate backpack and are willing to share your knowledge. Thanks for the amazing work. Well, I have found the ultimate backpack, and I've had mine for probably 3 years now. It's the Peak Design Everyday bag. I have the 30 liter. They also have a 20 liter. I certainly wouldn't go for the 20 liter if you want to put groceries in it as well. And it's great. Yeah. It's got this these huge openings on both sides. It swings around so you can open it while it's still slung around one arm. There's magnets in it. There's a bunch of little clasps that will I don't even know what they're called, but
there's so many clasps and magnets. I love it. Yeah.
You can clip it on, and I've been mad about it. And it's almost like a meme now. Like if you were to do the web developer starter pack, that backpack would be on it. It's funny thing is that it's like a photographer's backpack. It comes with all these little what do you call those? Like dividers?
Yeah. Inserts, dividers.
I took most of those out except for one. And then I keep one really low near the bottom, and I slide all the cords and everything under that. I put my backpack, put the laptop in the sleeve, and then that leaves the entire backpack for life stuff, like whatever it is that I'm working backpack on. I just went to the cottage this weekend, had my gloves in there, had a couple beers in there, things like that.
Ooh, yeah. I used mine as my suitcase last time we went to Reactathon, and it was great. I was impressed at how much stuff I could fit in there for like a weekend travel, and that's all I traveled with. I have the same backpack, different color, and yeah, this is the same answer. It's so dang good. I'm so happy that I listened to you instead of going out on my own and trying to get something, because this thing is very, very good. It's expensive, but totally worth it.
My only complaint with it is it's a bit on the heavy side. Sometimes I find myself being like, what is in my bag?
And you got to hit it back day.
Nothing in it. Yeah. Maybe I need to do some squats with my backpack on. But like compared to like, I've got like a Herschel, just a cheap Herschel backpack for the gym. And that thing it's just cloth. Right. And, I certainly wouldn't trust my laptop in that because I think it would get dinged. And certainly I even left the window open once and it rained on my backpack. And my laptop was bone dry. So that backpack's the best. And I've had it for 3 years and it looks brand new still.
Yeah, I was really impressed when I saw yours. I mean, I've had mine for about a year now and it's held up fantastically. I don't have any complaints whatsoever. All right, next question is from T-Sauce. T-Sauce says, do you write out vanilla fetch, as in the fetch method, in your components that need it, or do you use a fetch wrapper a la like Axios or one of those written by yourself or someone else? What do? I always write vanilla fetch. I don't use any wrappers. Why? I don't really need to. Not like it makes it makes life in edge cases easier, but I don't really encounter that stuff that often. To be entirely honest, I use GraphQL for my API on Level Up Tutorials. So the amount of fetch requests I'm writing in general is just about none anyways, but I do write them in tutorials all the time and we use straight up vanilla fetch. Do you prefer chocolate fetch or Neapolitan? Or
rum raisin?
Strawberry fetch?
I mostly use vanilla fetch as well in my project. So like obviously if there's something that is like a React project or something like that, then I use whatever I'm using in that project. But anytime I'm doing something smaller and I need to just I need fetch, I'll pretty much always just use the regular fetch. Sometimes I'll write a quick little wrapper function. If it's always going to be JSON that returns to me and I maybe want to handle the error within that function, I'll write a quick little 4 or 5 liner. And then that's great. But then when it comes to custom headers and API keys and things like that, then I'll reach for Axios, not because you can't do that with fetch, but because it has some nice defaults in there. So I'm kind of all over the place, but I would say probably in most cases, it's fine to just use fetch. It's kind of annoying that you have to do the double await.
Yeah. The double await thing isn't worth it to me to be like, okay, now I need a wrapper for this. You know, I will double await. Yeah,
totally. Just add another line of code. Who cares? Yeah.
You know, I personally find just writing vanilla fetch to be fast enough for me. You know what else is fast is the process of getting your website up and hosted on Netlify. And that, let me tell you about Netlify. In the past, we have talked so much about how much we love Netlify that people thought it was like almost a joke or something. But we are absolutely serious. And I'm absolutely dead serious when I say that Netlify is my favorite host on the entire planet. And when they first approached us to sponsor Syntax, I was absolutely, absolutely psyched about it because I knew that I could talk all day about how much I love Netlify. So you're going to want to check out Netlify. It's at netlify.com. They're the best place in my mind to host your front end code, but it's not just front end code. They have all sorts of extra additional features like serverless functions and authentication. And they added some
GitHub integration. Like it'll auto deploy from a GitHub commit. But then if someone submits a pull request, it will like show you the staged URL so you can check out.
Ooh.
Man, so many cool things.
Oh my gosh. A/B testing, comment form stuff, just their new analytics, which is like a DNS base level analytics rather than just like a script on your page. There's just so many cool things, and you're gonna head over to netlify.com. Let me tell you right now, you're gonna head over to netlify.com. And you're going to see that 600,000 developers and businesses trust Netlify. You're going to see amongst them some of the giants like, you know, Nike and Verizon and Peloton. Did you gift your wife a Peloton bike for Christmas this year? I don't know, maybe. But if you did, their thing was probably hosted on Netlify. So you're going to want to head to netlify.com/syntax and you're going to see all of the amazing things. Oh, we didn't even mention the free one-click HTTPS. It's on by automatic. No more futzing with SSL certificates.
You don't even have to click, Scott. It just comes with Netlify. So I set up a custom domain name and it just works, right? No clicking involved.
Negative one clicks. Yeah, you don't got to click. So, I mean, this may sound over the top, but again, we absolutely love Netlify and we're so psyched that they have, supported Syntax for as long as they have. So check it out, netlify.com/syntax. Sign up today and be absolutely amazed when you try it for the first time. Okay, next question is
from Alex Webster. Have you ever done, I don't know why I said that so funny, but have you ever done automation projects on Raspberry Pi? I'm trying my hand at remote access to a solar power setup at our batch. Ooh, do you know what a batch is?
Do I know what a batch is? I was going to come up with something funny, but I do not
know what a batch is. Also called a crib in the southern half of the South Island, is a small, often very modest holiday home or beach house. He notes here, very similar to what a cottage is in Canada. Well, that's pretty cool. Went to the batch this weekend.
Yeah. What nationality says that?
New Zealand.
New Zealand. Yeah.
I like it.
All right. Oh, he just said
there's a beach at the batch. Cooked up a batch of cookies at the batch.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm finding it hard to find good resources on Raspberry Pi for this outlined, and most of them get very technical really quickly. My idea is to take the RS-485 MOBUS data, and as far as I can tell, that's just like the lower level data, and send it to a database every 5 minutes or so. So he basically wants to take some information from his solar panel stuff with a Raspberry Pi and then pipe that out to a database. So I find this real, I added this one in because I thought it was pretty interesting. I'm like super into LTE modems right now as I'm trying to up my batch internet.
I'm pretty into LTE modems right now.
I'm pretty into LTE, but like what I'm finding is that a lot of these LTE modems are used on Raspberry Pis. And so I thought like, yeah, this would be really cool. So I think what you need to do from here is that you need to think that it's just a server. The Raspberry Pi is just a Linux server like you would normally use on something like DigitalOcean. But you need to be able to figure out, how do I get access to that lower level data? So with, remember I did that drone video at the beginning of last year where I flew a drone via React?
I don't remember. I don't remember
you
that.
You don't. Anyways, I did a drone.
I'm specifically not remembering that for a specific
just
reason.
Search. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Ooh. Do you want to engage the audience on what happened there?
They were going to send me a drone and then they chose to send one to Wes instead. And then were like, oh, yeah, we can't send you a drone. Sorry. I was so bad about it because we were in talks about it for like weeks. And I was just like, yeah, I'm going to get a drone. It's pretty cool. And then Wes is like, oh, I got my drone. And then they send me back, oh, yeah, we don't have any more drones. Sorry.
But the even further, though, is like I told him I would do it, but for money. And then Scott.
So oh, yeah. That, took, oh, yeah. That was
I
think it.
I took Scott's money, his drone money, just by asking for it. Anyways, I did like a React and Node.js drone video, and I needed to access all of the data from the drone, which was sent over UDP on a Wi-Fi signal. And then I needed to get that. That's very low level data. And I need to get that into the browser. So how do you do that? You do that with either DGRAM is what I use to get access to UDP, or you can use the child process.exec in Node. And that will just allow you to run shell commands. And that's probably what you want in your case, because as soon as you're on, you have access to the raw box then, and you can run shell commands to get information from there. And then you can send that out over a WebSocket or send it to React or save it to a database, like you're saying. So like, that's what's helped me, because like, I certainly don't understand how electronics work and how a lot of this low level Raspberry Pi stuff works, but it has helped me knowing that these are all just sensors or data, and you can access that data really low level. And then you just need to, as soon as you can throw that raw data into a Node.js process, then it's like, huh, because it's just JavaScript, and then you can start to sort of work with it. So I don't have any resources for that kind of thing, but that's what's helped me in the past.
Cool.
Have you ever done Raspberry Pi?
I have a Raspberry Pi. I have a lot of cool little gadgets for it. I've done Arduino stuff. I have not, and I would really love to, but it's one of those things you just got to find the time to really invest to get into it. I think I installed Raspbian on it and I got my Linux up and running. And then I was like, you know what? Yeah, come up with a project for this thing. And you know what I never did? Come up with a project for it. So I would really like to figure it out, or at least do something fun. And maybe it's in my future at some point. I would love to get into that. I just got to find the time to do so. Working with solar panels seems cool, though. That seems very cool.
That's the problem, is like being old is hard, because like when you're young, you got all time and no money. And then when you're older, you got like I got a little bit of money I'd spend on some solar panels, but I got no time to goof around with that.
Yeah, I got no time to goof around with it. And I would love that time to goof around with solar panels. That sounds like a blast. All right. Last question is from Charles Burgeon. He has two U's in there, so I don't know if that was a typo or if it's actually Urgeon. But he says, what do Wes and Scott think about beards? And have you ever thought about growing one? My answer is that my beard status is directly proportional to my stress levels. You can tell exactly how far along I am in any given project and how close I am to a release date by how disheveled my beard looks. And people will be like, hey, man, are you growing a beard? I'm like, no, I'm just really not taking care of myself right now. So that's something I'm trying to change. I'm trying to be better. New year, new me. I'm trying to shave my beard. I grow a very good beard. I don't think Courtney likes it. So I'm sort of apathetic on it. And if Courtney's not into the beard, I'm not going to keep it. So
I have never attempted to grow a beard. I certainly have. People always say like, oh, you're growing a beard. I'm like, no, I just haven't shaved in a long time. I think I have like a, what's it called? I just Googled it. Trichotillomania. It's where you pull your hair out. So if I'm just like stressed out about something and I'm trying to fix something on my code, I just sit there and just like pick away at my beard. And then before you know it, I just have like a bald spot. So because of that, I just can't.
Oh, wow.
I can't have a beard, because I just like anytime I get stressed out, I just start pulling away at it. I'm like, that's weird. And my wife's like, just stop doing that. And I was like, I wish I could, but it's a thing. So I don't know. I would love to. I think they look really cool. I just can't possibly do it because I just pull it out.
You know what? There are times that I've been like, you know, I should just do it to have a beard for a bit of a time, considering I got a nice full
beard.
It would look good on me. Yeah. Maybe I'll just go for it and say, sorry, Corey, you got to deal with it for a little bit. My apologies. I mean, you can have it for like a month and get rid of it. That's no biggie. It's reversible. Yeah. Good idea. So thank you, Charles.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for submitting all of your questions. Those are great. Make sure you keep on submitting those questions. We are going to move into some sick picks. You got a sick pick for me today, Scott?
I do. I've been racking up some sick picks lately in terms of stuff that I've been really wanting to tell people about. So this is a neat little thing that I'd always been looking at for a long time. My back doesn't feel great. I have pretty bad, poor back flexibility in general. I've kind of neglected it in the scheme of things. And I've been working on, you know, changing some of that. I've been stretching every day. I'm on a 18-day stretching streak. No, I think it's even longer than that. Let me check my stretching streak. It is significant. I'm on a 25-day stretching streak. So I'm all about stretching my back right now. And one of the cool things that I got was this yoga wheel. Now, in the past, these Instagram influencers would be like, here's the yoga wheel, and it's $100 for a piece of PVC cut in a circle. And I just thought it was a really cool idea because there's these big sort of wheels, like these big PVC wheels. I thought it was a really cool idea, but I was never going to spend $100 on one of these things. That just seemed stupid. So I got this new one, which is one of these Amazon knockoffs, of which there's thousands of Amazon knockoffs of everything now. And this one is a $40 competitor, but it comes with two of them, comes with two different ones. And it's really cool because it's a big giant wheel, and I'll just lay with my back on it like a Swedish ball, one of those. But it's so small, you can just have it around the living room other than a giant Swedish ball that you would be really weird to have around. I'll just lay on it for a little bit. And it's funny, the little one is this little miniature one. It's the perfect size for Landon. And Landon loves laying on his next to Dada when Dada's laying on it, stretching on his back. Landon will be like, my back hurts too, Dad. Let me stretch it out. So it's super cute. I love this thing. And it was a nice little addition to my life here. I've been using it every day.
I am going to sick pick cable ties. So I recently redid my desk. I talked about one of my last sick picks. And one of the things I got were these like Velcro cable ties that sort of ratchet down on themselves. And I just went bananas on all of my cords. And now all my cords have these nice cable ties on them. These ones are Velcro, which have like the hooks and the, I don't know, what do you call it? What is the other part of Velcro? The fuzzy side and the hook side. I think there are some cable ties that doesn't matter which side they are. I would like to find those. I couldn't find them when I was looking for them. So I just got 100-pack of these Velcro ones, and they are awesome. And my life is so much more in order for them. So it's just something I think it's every tech nerd needs to have on hand, is these Velcro cable ties.
Yeah, I have the Velcro, the thread through Velcro ones, and they are absolutely instrumental to the organization of all of my stuff. So any type of cable tie, I think if you're interested in having one of those IG ready desks, is totally necessary.
Desk boys.
Yeah. You know, we're all about desk boys. I recently tweeted out a photo of my laptop, and one of the hashtags was like, laptop with filter for basic coding computer people. Because that's like an Instagram category. It's just like, here, let me just take a photo of my laptop all the time.
I want somebody to make an Instagram meme account where it just collects these pictures of people. Like I got sent one today from Henry Helvetica, where this guy is like standing literally on the edge of a cliff with his laptop. I was like, what? First of all, like, you're not actually doing any code from the edge of a cliff. Second of all, you got to schlep that thing all the way up to that cliff just for your IG photo. Come on.
Epic photo, man. Epic photo.
So if anybody wants fame, please make that count.
Do you remember extreme ironing?
No.
There was at some point in the earlier days of the internet, this was like OG meme, like planking kind of thing. But it was an extreme sport that these people were trying to do for fun. And they were extreme ironing. And it's just like people, there's a guy ironing while wakeboarding, skydiving. Isn't it hilarious? This was like one of the, like these like OG, like this was early internet things. It was super funny. That's what that reminds me of.
Extreme ironing. That's great. So somebody needs to make like an Instagram account called like Extreme Computing. And
that's Extreme Computing.
Extreme Computing. And just repost these hilarious staged shots with a funny caption.
This is like epic tutorial for me destroying my laptop somehow.
Shameless plugs, go to beginnerjavascript.com is my latest course. Check it out. It will still be on sale to the end of January. You can grab it and learn. It's an exercise-heavy approach to learning modern JavaScript from scratch.
From scratch. I'm going to plug my latest course that's going to be dropping on the 31st. So on Friday, this course is coming out, and it is a doozy. It is all about GraphQL servers. So a lot of times with these GraphQL tutorials, we mostly focus on the client side, right? Apollo client, you're pulling in data, here's an API that exists. But what I didn't find was a ton of tutorials that were completely focused on the basics of building a GraphQL server. So we're not talking about database stuff. We're not talking about Express stuff, really. What we're talking about is, how do you write your schema? How do you write your resolvers, mutations? How do you do all those things, fragments, unions, all those weird little things? What the heck is an AST type name, stuff like that? So if you want to check this out, the course is called How to Make a GraphQL Server. It's going to be available on the 31st, and it is available exclusively on leveluptutorials.com.
All right, I think that's it. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you on Monday.
Hey.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.